Have you noticed that planning a weekend out with friends has basically become this absolute extreme sport of last-minute decisions?
Oh, it is entirely an extreme sport now. It's so stressful.
All right. I mean, you know the exact scenario I'm talking about. You're sitting there looking at your group chat, just trying to get people to commit to like a concert or maybe a food festival or even just a local comedy show.
And nobody wants to be the first one to say yes.
Exactly. Everyone is completely dodging the question. They're sending those vague emojis, liking the link without actually saying anything, just waiting until the absolute last possible second to actually put their credit card down and buy a ticket.
Which is incredibly frustrating for the person organizing the night out.
Totally. But, well, if you've been operating this way, you are definitely far from the only one. And it turns out your procrastination, our procrastination, really is radically changing a multi-billion dollar industry behind the
It
scenes.
really is. The whole landscape has shifted.
Yeah, so welcome to this deep dive. We have a lot to cover. On the desk today, we've got a stack of four really fascinating industry reports from 2026 that just completely break down the live event industry.
We have some incredibly granular data from RSVPify on ticket sales patterns, which is eye-opening.
Yeah, plus that comprehensive trends report from FIXR on festival marketing and two really detailed strategy guides from the Ticket Fairy promoter blog.
All of which paint a very clear picture of what's going on behind the curtain.
Exactly. So our mission today is to decode the psychology of the modern ticket buyer, which, let's be honest, includes you listening to this right now. We're going to uncover the incredibly sophisticated marketing playbook that organizers are using to basically hack our procrastination and force us to finally hit that checkout button.
Because they have to. Their survival depends on it.
Right. Okay, let's unpack this because the way we consume live entertainment has completely transformed, and I really don't think we fully realize how much anxiety we are causing the people who are actually throwing the parties.
Anxiety is probably an understatement. I mean, we are looking at a fundamental rewiring of consumer psychology over just, well, a few short years, really.
Which is wild to think about.
It is. The data we pulled from Pollstar and Eventbrite, it paints a pretty stark picture. Right now, 57% of tickets are sold a week or less before showtime.
Wait, 57%, over half.
Over half. More than half of an event's entire audience is waiting until the final 7 days to just, pull the trigger. We are no longer dealing with some fringe group of procrastinators. The late buyer is now the dominant demographic.
Wow. Which just feels like a massive shift. I am trying to imagine the panic of throwing a major event and looking at a half-empty venue like a week before doors open.
It's terrifying for promoters.
I bet. But I have a hypothesis here. Is this just, the lingering hangover of the pandemic? Because we got so used to sudden cancellations that nobody wants to commit their money until they are physically standing outside the venue.
That's a huge part of it. The post-pandemic hesitation is definitely the foundation of this behavior. But the data points to a convergence of several pressures, not just that.
Like what else?
Tighter budgets, for one. Inflation plays a huge role here. Live events have basically become these premium expenses, so consumers delay spending until they are absolutely certain it is the one specific event they want to go to that month.
Right. It's a bigger chunk of the paycheck now.
Exactly. And then there's the social coordination bottleneck you mentioned at the top. The friction of getting, say, six people to agree on an itinerary, it creates a massive delay.
Right.
And the larger the group, the later the purchase.
Because you're constantly waiting for that one friend to check their work schedule.
Yes. And even the absolute behemoths of the industry are caught in this trap now. The reports highlight Coachella's first weekend in 2024.
Oh, I remember hearing about this.
Yeah, it took 27 days for passes to sell out, which is a staggering departure from the year prior when all the inventory vanished in mere hours.
27 days versus hours. That is insane. I wonder, though, how much of this we kind of brought upon ourselves by expecting dynamic pricing to save us.
How do you mean?
Well, because if I am holding out on a concert ticket, part of my brain is secretly thinking, hey, if I hold my nerve, the algorithm will panic, the price will drop, and I'll score a huge deal. Like, have we just been trained to wait for a fire sale?
What's fascinating here is that you've identified a self-fulfilling cycle that the live event industry accidentally created. It totally operates as a behavioral loop.
So I'm not crazy for thinking that.
Not at all. Fans delay their purchase, fully expecting a last-minute price drop. The organizers, who frankly lack the nerve or the cash reserves to endure an empty room, eventually slash prices to fill the space.
And boom, the fans get their cheap tickets.
Right. But the long-term damage is severe. Those fans and basically everyone in their social circle, they learned that buying early is a fool's errand. The organizer just trained their audience to never, ever buy an advance ticket again.
Oh, man. We essentially conditioned ourselves to play a high-stakes game of chicken with ticketing platforms.
And the platforms are losing.
Currently. But since we know buyers are waiting until the very end, I want to look at the specific mechanics of when that stalemate breaks. Because the RSVPify data we have breaks this down by the day of the week, right?
Yes, and it's incredibly revealing.
It shows that different types of events trigger entirely different cognitive responses from us.
Exactly. The segmentation in that RSVPify data proves there is no single monolithic ticket buyer.
Yeah.
If we isolate leisure events, so shows, performances, music festivals, Friday is the undisputed king of conversions.
Friday makes total sense.
It does. The data shows 17.6% of buyers purchase just 1 to 3 days before a performance, and nearly a third buy in that final week.
A third.
Yeah, and sports and recreation events show an almost identical impulse-driven pattern with 30.7% of tickets moving in the final week.
That makes intuitive sense for leisure, though. Friday hits. Our cognitive load from the work week finally just drops. We look at our phones, and the dopamine-seeking part of our brain says, okay, what are we actually doing tonight?
Right, the weekend is suddenly real.
Yeah, we just don't have the mental bandwidth on a Tuesday to plan our weekend joy. But the data for B2B events and conferences, that operates in a completely different universe, doesn't it?
A completely inverted universe, really. For conferences, expos, professional events, the weekends are an absolute dead zone. Nobody is buying.
None at all.
Barely any. Tuesday and Wednesday are the leading days for registrations. And unlike that Friday night impulse buy we just talked about, over half of conference registrations happen more than 2 months out.
See, I have to challenge the marketing logic here, though.
Okay, go for it.
If I am an organizer throwing a massive tech conference and I want to capture people's attention, doesn't it make sense to blast my digital ads on a Saturday afternoon?
Why Saturday?
Because that is when my target audience is sitting on the couch scrolling their feeds. They actually have the free time to read a dense itinerary, right?
It sounds logical, but running top-of-funnel ads on a weekend for a B2B event might seem like a clever way to capture idle attention. But the conversion data says it's essentially setting your marketing budget on fire.
Really? Just throwing money away?
Completely. Conference buying isn't an impulse purchase. It is a complex work task. The transaction requires the buyer to be sitting at their desk, checking departmental travel budgets, syncing calendars with colleagues, and, you know, routing a purchase order to a manager for approval.
Oh, of course. You can't do any of that on your couch on a Saturday.
Exactly. None of those mechanisms are available on a Saturday afternoon. The buying intent is strictly bound by business hours.
That distinction changes everything about how you deploy capital. It's a bureaucratic task, not a vibe.
That's a perfect way to put it.
And you know, that bureaucratic routing actually explains another really fascinating data point in the report regarding galas.
The flatline.
Yes, the data says galas have a completely flat, deliberate Monday to Friday purchasing pattern. No Friday spikes, no early bird surges, just a flat line. And I realized why as I was reading it. Gala tickets are usually bought as corporate tables.
Which means it's administrative.
Exactly. It is literally an executive assistant routing an invoice through an accounting department. The purchase just happens randomly on a Thursday at 11 a.m. whenever the CFO finally signs off.
That is the exact mechanism driving that flat curve. And then you have reunions, which have this massive long tail, often seeing the bulk of purchases 6+ months out.
Wow, 6 months. People really need to plan for those.
They do. So the operational lesson here is that a generic ticketing playbook is fatal. If you try to push Friday night urgency on a B2B conference, or if you expect a local music festival to sell out 2 months early based on reunion-style logistics, you're completely misinterpreting the specific psychology of your buyer.
Which brings us to the operational nightmare that this psychology creates. Because if we connect the fact that we delay our leisure purchases until Friday before the event, we start to see how that completely breaks the fundamental financial mechanics of the industry.
It's a massive problem.
Let's look at the cash flow crunch and the mid-campaign slump.
Event production budgets are notoriously front-loaded. And this is where consumer procrastination just violently collides with financial reality. The Ticket Fairy reports outline a standard three-phase sales curve.
Right, the three phases.
First, you have the initial launch surge. That captures maybe 20 to 40% of your most loyal, diehard fans. Then, the campaign enters the mid-campaign plateau, where sales effectively flatline for weeks or even months.
And then the end?
Finally, you have the final countdown surge.
The dreaded plateau. To put this in perspective for anyone listening, running a massive event isn't like opening a retail store where you just buy inventory as you go.
Not at all.
It is much closer to the burn rate of a venture capital startup. As an organizer, you are deploying 80 to 90% of your total capital months before the doors ever open. You have massive venue deposits, you have force majeure insurance premiums,
which are huge right now.
Right. And crucially, you have talent guarantees. A major artist doesn't get paid a percentage of the door on the night of the show anymore. They require half their fee wired to an escrow account 6 months in advance.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the existential threat becomes so obvious. All of that capital is gone out the door. But due to the 57% of people waiting until the final week, up to half of the event's revenue doesn't even exist yet.
It's like running a restaurant buying thousands of dollars of caviar and Wagyu beef for a banquet and nobody has even RSVP'd.
It's exactly like that. The organizer is floating a massive financial liability across that entire mid-campaign plateau, just praying that the Friday surge actually materializes.
And sometimes the math simply fails. The reports cite the 2023 cancellation of Scotland's Riverside Festival.
That was a tough one for the industry.
Yeah, they pulled the plug just 3 weeks out. The organizers realized that no amount of desperate last-minute promotional blitzing was going to bridge the massive gap left by months of slow sales. The risk of opening the doors and actually paying staff for the weekend was higher than the risk of just canceling the whole thing.
Which is why the industry has had to evolve beyond gut instinct promotion and adopt rigorous sales pace forecasting.
What does that look like in practice?
Basically, organizers are building these complex dashboards that track velocity, not just total volume. They aren't just looking at the fact that they have sold 500 tickets. They are plotting the trajectory of those 500 tickets against historical cohorts.
Ah, so comparing it to past years.
Right. If they're at 30% capacity 8 weeks out, the algorithm tells them if that represents a healthy expected plateau for their specific market or a terminal failure that requires an immediate aggressive intervention.
So if the dashboard flashes red and tells them they are in a terminal slump, they can't just sit there. They have to intervene.
They have to do something immediately.
How are organizers actively weaponizing this waiting game against us? Let's get into the marketing counterattack outlined in the FAXR and Ticket Fairy strategies.
The absolute foundation of hacking the mid-campaign slump is tiered pricing. But there is an ironclad rule that modern promoters follow here. Prices must only ever go up.
Never down.
Never. You reward your earliest buyers with the lowest price or exclusive perks, and you systematically raise the cost through clear phases advance, phase two, final release.
I have to challenge this logic, though.
Let's hear it.
If I'm an organizer and my dashboard tells me my venue is alarmingly empty a week out, human nature and basic economics scream, cut the price to get bodies in the room.
You're telling me organizers will intentionally take a massive financial loss running a half-empty room just to preserve this rule?
The smart ones will, absolutely, because the alternative is corporate suicide.
Really? Corporate suicide? Yes. If you slash prices at the last minute to save one event, you destroy the trust of the 30% of people who actually bought early. You just penalized your most loyal fans for their loyalty.
Because they paid more than the guy who walked up on the day of.
Exactly. And more importantly, you guarantee that next year, no one will buy an early ticket. By maintaining the integrity of the pricing tiers, never rewarding a latecomer with a discount, you create legitimate financial leverage. You are telling the market, wait if you want, but it will cost you.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. The FXR report talks about the psychological bridge across that dead zone, treating the midpoint of the campaign like a second launch. They call it a content relaunch.
It's a brilliant strategy.
It is. Instead of just posting the same graphic flyer over and over, which, let's face it, we all become completely blind to after 2 days, they start dropping highly cinematic, story-led, short-form video.
Yes, shifting the medium.
One tactic that really stood out was the empty venue tour. They literally fly a drone through an empty warehouse or an empty field with a voiceover, explaining the production build, creating this incredible sense of scale before a single stage is even constructed.
That tactic leverages world building. You are pulling the potential buyer out of their logical scheduling mindset and triggering an emotional response.
It feels like a movie trailer.
Exactly. You aren't selling a barcode. You are selling the anticipation of a physical space. Another really powerful mechanism to reignite momentum during that slump is the staggered lineup.
Oh, like Tomorrowland does.
Tomorrowland is the textbook example of this. They don't drop their entire artist roster on day one. They release the heavy-hitting headliners first to capture the initial launch surge. And then, right when the dashboard shows the mid-campaign slump setting in, they drop a phase two lineup.
And they pair that lineup drop with the ticketing tiers. They engineer overlapping deadlines.
It creates incredible pressure.
It does. You will see a post that says, phase two lineup dropping in 72 hours, but the current ticket tier price jumps in 24 hours. They're basically forcing you to make a bet. Do you buy now, blind, to secure the cheaper price, or do you wait to see the artists and pay a premium? It is brilliant because it forces an action right then and there.
It artificially injects urgency into a period of the campaign where natural urgency is basically zero.
Mm-hmm.
But the execution of that urgency is delicate, especially when it comes to scarcity.
That is a crucial point. Whenever I'm on a ticketing platform and I see a flashing red banner yelling, only 50 tickets left, my immediate cynical assumption is that it's a script.
A fake countdown timer.
Yeah. I assume it's a marketing lie designed to trigger panic.
Your cynicism is entirely justified, and the data reflects that. Fake scarcity might capture a few panicked buyers in the short term, but it aggressively burns audience trust.
People catch on quick.
They do. The Ticket Fairy guides are adamant about this. Urgency must be rooted in granular, verifiable truth. Vague phrases like selling fast become completely invisible to consumers after 3 months.
So if they can't cry wolf, how do they prove the scarcity is real without sounding like a scammy infomercial? Do they actually expose their real inventory numbers?
Yes. The most effective promoters expose the exact data. Instead of saying tickets running low, they will isolate the scarcity to a specific believable add-on.
Like what?
Like only 22 VIP passes remaining, or final 45 camping spots available. Granularity equals authenticity. They also lean heavily into user-generated content, UGC.
Using the fans to sell to the fans.
Exactly. When organizers amplify real videos from real fans talking about securing their tickets, it provides the authentic social proof that validates the scarcity. It signals to the procrastinator that the train is actually leaving the station and real people are already on board.
Which brings us to the final sprint. We are now in that final 7-day window where the bulk of the revenue is won or lost. The marketing strategy undergoes a complete pivot here.
A very aggressive pivot.
Yeah, they stop trying to build the brand or tell a story, and they shift entirely to high-intent conversion. They essentially weaponize the audience against itself.
The budget allocation completely flips in this final week. Broad social media awareness campaigns are paused. Instead, capital is flooded into search engine marketing.
Buying keywords.
Yes. The organizers know that the extreme procrastinators are going to open Google on a Thursday and type last-minute tickets to whatever event or what to do in my city this weekend. They are buying that specific intent, so their link is the absolute first thing the buyer sees when they finally decide to pull the trigger.
And beyond search engines, they mobilize their existing ticket holders using referral networks.
Those are incredibly powerful.
The sources detail these bring-a-friend incentives, which are deviously effective.
Mm.
An organizer might offer a partial refund, a VIP upgrade, or even just a free drink voucher if you get a friend to buy a ticket using your unique tracking link.
Because peer pressure works.
It really does. And the psychology behind this is undeniable. The reports state that 88% of people trust friend recommendations over traditional advertising.
We have developed complete blindness to banner ads. But a personal text from a friend saying, hey, I'm going to use my code so we both get a free drink, that bypasses all of our marketing defenses.
It totally does.
It turns a solitary purchase into a social obligation. And the data shows this referral tracking can yield a 15 to 25% sales bump right at the very end.
It's the ultimate conversion tool, but I am curious about the physics of a sellout.
Right.
What happens when this matrix of search ads and referral codes works too well? The guides explicitly state you should never drop prices to clear the last few tickets, but what is the protocol when demand completely outstrips supply?
This raises an important question about the tension between maximizing short-term capital and protecting the long-term attendee experience.
Because you don't want a miserable crowd.
Right. When a campaign surges in the final week, the overwhelming temptation for an organizer is to expand capacity to squeeze every possible body into the venue. But doing so degrades the product.
Oh, absolutely.
The bar lines become unbearable, the bathrooms fail, and the crowd feels unsafe. You might maximize your revenue for one night, but you severely damage the brand equity for next year. People won't come back.
So you have to cap the inventory to protect the experience. But from a business perspective, turning away eager buyers who have their credit cards out just feels like a massive failure.
Which is why the immediate transition to a waitlist is the final, crucial step of the playbook. A waitlist isn't just a polite rejection. It is an aggressive data capture tool. You are farming that excess demand.
The case study in the sources regarding the waitlist was incredible. A tech conference hit its 1,000-person capacity and immediately threw up a waitlist, capturing 1,500 additional signups from people who missed out.
More than the actual capacity.
Right. And the organizers didn't just ignore that list. They took those 1,500 disappointed people and offered them an exclusive early bird purchasing window for the next year's conference.
Right.
By doing that, they converted 1,500 waitlisters into 800 paid pre-registrations a full year in advance. They essentially eliminated their cash flow crunch for the following year before the current year's event even happened.
They engineered a cycle where success compounds. By capping the event and creating a waitlist, they manufactured intense FOMO. The people who missed out felt the sting of procrastination so acutely that they became the most reliable day one buyers for the next cycle.
So, what does this all mean for you? It means the next time you are sitting on your couch on a Thursday night, debating with your group chat about whether you should buy a ticket for a Friday show, you need to look really closely at your digital environment.
You're being targeted.
Exactly. Notice the highly specific search ad that pops up when you Google the venue. Notice the granular warning that there are exactly 14 tickets left in the current pricing tier. Notice the text from your friend offering a referral link. None of these elements are accidental.
None of them.
They are the visible gears of a highly calibrated, data-driven machine that is reacting to your specific brand of procrastination, designed to capture you right at the finish line.
The sophistication of that machine is impressive, but it leaves us with a broader implication about the future of the industry itself.
Where is this all heading?
Well, as extreme last-minute buying solidifies as the permanent norm, the financial risk of floating these massive upfront costs is becoming catastrophic for independent local organizers who don't have venture capital backing.
The Lipris are getting crushed.
Precisely. If the sheer anxiety of surviving the mid-campaign plateau continues to bankrupt local promoters, we might see a fundamental shift away from single ticket sales entirely.
Wait, really? Moving away from tickets?
Could the future of live entertainment rely on a localized subscription model? Imagine paying a monthly fee directly to the independent venues in your city, providing them the baseline cash flow they need to keep their doors open and their staff paid, regardless of whether you decide to attend the show that specific weekend.
The subscription model just to keep the infrastructure of live music alive in our cities?
Yeah.
Wow, that completely reframes how we value and support the arts, moving away from a transactional Friday night impulse buy to a sustaining community investment.
It might be the only way forward.
Something to seriously consider the next time you are sitting in that group chat holding out until 6 p.m. on a Friday. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep asking questions, keep looking behind the curtain, and we will catch you next time.